Deuteronomy 16 and verse 16 tells us that three seasons in the year, it says, all your males shall appear before the Lord your God. It's a command about coming up for God's feast seasons, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles. Feast of Tabernacles, we know, is just about 6 weeks away or so. And I thought I'd ask you, how do you go about preparing for the Feast of Tabernacles? We all do certain physical things. We reserve our housing. We make our travel plans, planning to fly, or maybe we rent a car and drive by car. We're going international. Maybe we make sure our passport is up to date or get a new passport if we need it. We look ahead at the schedule. We plan our activities. We do a lot of that kind of preparation for the Feast of Tabernacles. But what do you do specifically to prepare spiritually for the feast? That's what I want to talk about today and look at a section of Scripture that I think can add to our excitement about the coming Feast of Tabernacles. And I think it can help strengthen our spiritual preparation for the feast. The book of Psalms is a collection. We know that was assembled over a period of, most think, about 300 years altogether. And among those 150 psalms are various series of psalms that go together because of their theme. And the largest set or collection like that is called the Psalms of Degree or the Songs of Ascents. Ascent as in ascending a mountain, depending if you have the New King James or the King James. When you look at Psalm 20, for example, and we're looking at Psalms 120 through Psalm 134, the title under the designation Psalm 120, it's titled A Song of Ascents. If you have a King James, it will say A Song of Degrees. And each of the 15 psalms that we'll look at have that designation that appears in each of those 15. Of these 15 psalms, one was written by Solomon, four were written by David, and 10 were written by someone whose name we're not given. We don't know who that was. The title, Song of Ascents or Song of Degrees, literally in the Hebrew means goings up, songs about going up. And it had to do with the annual pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Of course, Jerusalem had the highest elevation in the land. Jerusalem built on hills, and literally people coming for the feast in Jerusalem were going up. They were going up to keep the feast tabernacles. And the Song of Ascents refers to that matter of going up to Jerusalem. In Isaiah 30 and verse 29, what does this remind you of? Isaiah 30 and verse 29. Turn there and we'll look at Isaiah 30 and verse 29. Isaiah 30 and verse 29, where it says, you shall have a song as in the night when a holy festival is kept, and gladness of heart, as when one goes with a flute, to come into the mountain of the Lord, to the mighty one of Israel. Anything about that verse strike you as far as remind you of something that we typically do each Feast of Tabernacles? Any reminder, those of you who have been to the feast, what does that remind you of? Anybody? Yeah, Zelda? The opening night when we sing a song, we sing hymns and have a service, the opening night service with that beautiful full moon. Of course, if you're in Branson, that probably doesn't happen most likely because of in a theater, there are often evening shows, and instead of an evening service opening night in Branson, they'll have two services on the first holy day, a morning and an afternoon service, and not able to have an evening service. But the verse, Isaiah 30 verse 29, speaks about this period of time, this pilgrimage to Jerusalem. And it gives an indication about what we'll see in the Psalms of Ascents during the holy day season, the festival season. And it's interesting that it mentions this evening or nighttime ceremony with a concert or song service as part of that celebration, perhaps similar to what we do on the opening night feast. We know the feast is a very special occasion. The Psalms are songs, and these 15 were sung, but they also typify the meaning that God wants us to understand about the fall holy day season, and especially the Feast of Tabernacles, because these songs were specially written for the fall holy day season. They were sung by, is believed, by the Levitical choir on the steps going up to the temple. I want to read from the Sansino commentary about this set of psalms. A group of 15 psalms now occurs, each bearing the title Song of Ascents. In the Mishnaic description of the temple, it is stated, 15 steps led up from within the court of the women to the court of the Israelites, corresponding to the 15 songs of ascents in the psalms. And upon them the Levites used to sing. At the ceremony of rejoicing at the place of water drawing on the festival of tabernacles, the Levites were stationed upon the 15 steps corresponding to the 15 songs of ascents in the Psalms. It was upon these steps that the Levites stood with their musical instruments and sang their songs. So as the Levites went up those steps, they were singing to God, and the choir that was there, described in Josephus and other places, were answering back. There was a song from the Levite, Levitical choir, and a response from other singers as well, and it created very festive air in Jerusalem at the start of the Feast of Tabernacles. But these 15 songs are also used in the procession, the people that were traveling to Jerusalem, and as they would arrive, these songs would be sung, but they would sing them along the way as well, because it reminded them of many of God's promises and blessings. You know, what did you do when your children were small and you were driving 6 hours to the feast? Maybe you sang songs, you played tapes. Today people have televisions in their car and they play DVDs. But, you know, you did things to occupy your children because there's a long trip. Well, for Israel, it was a long travel. And they often sang these songs. The trip up to Jerusalem was often accompanied, made with singing and celebration. They were looking forward to getting to Jerusalem and celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles. I think we can all kind of fit ourselves into these shoes as we think about the Feast of Tabernacles. So some of what we'll read in these Psalms may be hard for us to understand today, because we just pack up the car and off we go. And, you know, drive on the interstate highway or fly on a plane, you know, across the ocean. But Israel did this traveling with great feeling and festivity in getting to Jerusalem. And I think the section of Psalms that we'll look at, some of them today, will see a number of lessons for us that, again, I think that can add to our celebration of the feast and our preparation for the feast. These songs are also called pilgrim songs because of traveling. The Feast of Tabernacles has that meaning. We live in temporary dwellings. We're pilgrims on the earth at this time. They recognize that too. The Israelites did that. They were making a pilgrimage. They were leaving their homes behind for temporary dwellings in Jerusalem. We do the same thing today, to come up to worship God. But as I mentioned in the split sermon, remember that David was also a prophet. He was king of Israel, but he was also a prophet. And in a number of the Psalms, he talked about Christ prophetically and Christ's first coming. Psalm 22 is a striking example of prophecy about Christ's death. But he also wrote about other prophecies that would occur in the world at the end of the age and also on into the world tomorrow. And we'll see some of those highlighted in these Psalms as well. So there are prophetic messages in some of what we'll look at today. I think they'll be fairly obvious to you. They contain the prophetic message that God is ultimately our refuge. That message comes through very clear. And God, in these messages, I think, really helps us to prepare for the Feast of Tabernacles. So let's begin in Psalm 120, and we'll cover a few of these psalms today. Psalm 120, which, as you see labeled, Psalm 120, a song of ascents. It begins as kind of a song of distress. Why would that be the case? Verse 1, in my distress, I cried to the Lord, and he heard me. What distress could Israel have been experiencing? Well, they had distress of enemy nations at times attacking, but travel then was much harder and much more arduous than it is today. They had a much harder route, in a sense, to get to the Feast of Tabernacles. There were wilderness areas to travel through. There were marauding bands of thieves to be wary of. Of course, we have some of those elements today as well. But as these pilgrim families made this arduous journey to Jerusalem to worship, they would use these psalms both in reading and in singing them as a means of encouragement along the way. And what you find in this psalm is the theme that, look, the world is not a pretty place to be at this time. Their travels, it was not a pretty place to be. They're in wilderness areas. And the world today for us is not a pretty place to be. Life can be distressing, as it was for them at times. They looked forward to the rest and relief that they would find at the Feast of Tabernacles. It's a parallel to what we look forward to today as well. When you think about the world tomorrow, the beginning of the world tomorrow, it will begin on what? On rubble. It'll begin on the rubble of a burned out world that has been at war, that has experienced disease epidemics and destruction. And the world tomorrow will begin on that, pictured by the Feast of Trumpets, God's intervention and the destruction that is going to take place. In a sense, the millennium begins kind of like Tohu and Bohu, you know, chaos and confusion, which will exist for a period of time. There will be such destruction, famine, and disease. A small fraction of mankind surviving. Great distress. So this psalm is also prophetic of that as well. God is going to forgive mankind for sins, but still there is going to be some coping with the consequences of sin. For us today, the millennium begins, as does the feast, often with a bit of distress, maybe certain trials. We talk about pre-feast trials that happen to us, and that there may be a bit of distress. So it starts out on that note. But notice verse 2, 3, and 4. Deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips and from a deceitful tongue. What shall be given to you, or what shall be done to you, you false tongue? Sharp arrows of the warrior with coals of the broom tree. Again, there's a note of certain distress here. And we know that from one year to the next year, between the Feast of Tabernacles, how has your year been? Hopefully smooth and no trials at all. But probably we've all had some trials during this past year. Health trials or finance trials or family trials. We go through certain trials from year to year. As Israel was getting ready for the feast, they recognized there were things they had to come out of, and there were things they would have to go through to get there to the feast, as we have had to do as well. Again, we speak of some of our pre-feast trials. For some people, before the feast, sometimes the most difficult time of the year. Satan seems to try to do things to discourage and undermine our attitude and our preparation for the feast. And those things do happen. Verse 5 and 6. Woe is me that I dwelt in Meshech, that I dwelt among the tents of Kedar. My soul has dwelt too long with one who hates peace. Interesting statement. You know, this was a time, there were times where Israel was alienated from God and went through tribulation. Meshech and Kedar are symbols of oppression. They're just symbolic of oppression. For us, you could say we're in enemy territory. We live in enemy territory. Satan's world is not a world at peace. We look forward to a world at peace. We look forward to the Feast of Tabernacles at peace. Verse 7, I am for peace. God's people are for peace. We long for peace. We long for the whole world to be at peace. I am for peace. But when I speak, they are for war. God's people are a peace-loving people. We've been taught to love peace. It's one of the key differences between the world today and ultimately the world tomorrow. Things at peace, a time of peace. So all of these Psalms of Ascents, all 15, in places contain this attitude of peace, of wanting peace, the peace that will be found as we move out of the world and make the pilgrimage to the Feast of Tabernacles, that there is a peace that is available to us. And along with it, we'll see as these Psalms, as we progress, that the attitude moves into that as well, as our attitude is to change. As we come out of the world, we leave the world behind, we go into the peace of the Feast of Tabernacles. So Psalm 20 is for the beginning of the journey to the fall of holy days. It was for ancient Israel, for us related to going to the Feast of Tabernacles. So there is this attitude that we look forward to the feast in. And basically, you know, we talk about how we love the feast. And I've used in opening night sermons, I not only love the feast, I need the Feast of Tabernacles. It's kind of like, let me out of here. I need some relief. I need peace. Let me out of this world for the next 8 days. So that's contained here in this psalm. And God has promised to give us peace. So this psalm instructs us that at the beginning of the feast, we should shake loose of the stresses of the daily grind, shake loose of the rat race, leave our problems behind, throw ourselves into the feast, because it gives us a taste of the millennium. We're leaving something behind and looking forward to something that is yet future. Psalm 121 then. Does anybody have any comments on Psalm 120? I think we can all identify with certain trials we've had or difficulties, or sometimes the feast doesn't get off to a great start, but we try to get into the feast frame of mind so that our mind is at peace and at rest and we're truly enjoying the feast. Well, let's go on to Psalm 121. Again, if you have any comments, please feel free to raise your hand and contribute those. Psalm 121 in the Nelson Study Bible is labeled a psalm of trust, a psalm of trust. Notice how it starts out, verse 1 and 2. I will lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence comes my help? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Now again, think of it in both physical and spiritual terms. A hill is a refuge from war. From, you know, the plains of Israel, when armies and chariots would come across those plains, refuge was in the hills and in the caves in those hills. And people would lift their eyes to the hills for escape and for a rescue. We spiritually lift our eyes to God. We go to God's throne in prayer. Safety came for them from hills geographically. Safety and refuge for us comes the hill of God's throne spiritually, from the hill of God's throne. But also Jerusalem is on a hill. It's where God dwelt in the temple on Mount Moriah, most likely the same place where God will dwell in the future. And people would come to the temple to worship God, to be in the presence of God. Verse 3 and 4, He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. We sing those words in one of the Psalms, but what you find in these verses, 3, 4, 5, and 6, this word keep and keeper and preserve, over repeated 5 or 6 times in a few verses. That is, the ancient Israel, God was their traveling companion. He would keep them safe. They had faith in God. He was their keeper and preserver, all using the same Hebrew word, keep, keeper, preserver, all the same Hebrew word. Now, again, think about what that means for us. Christ was the keeper of the physical nation of Israel. He is the keeper of his church today. And he's also the keeper of each of us individually. We go to Christ. He is our keeper, preserver. We learn from him, and we learn to be like him. Verse 5 and 6, the Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. It can get awfully hot in Israel in the dry climate. I was there for 3 weeks back in 1990 or so. We were told drink water, large gulps of water, about every 20 minutes to avoid becoming dehydrated. Shade can sometimes be the difference between life and death in that desert climate. So we're told the Lord is your keeper. He is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. We're told that in the New Testament, Christ is our keeper. The Bible shows us that there is never a time when God's people are forgotten by God. God never forgets his people. God's people are never unprotected by God. God is there. He is our keeper. Verse 7 and 8, the Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul or your life. The Lord shall preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forevermore. There is prophecy about the future and a future with God. We rely on God's protection throughout our lives. When we leave, we rely on God's protection on our homes. As we travel to and from the feast, going in and out, we rely for God's protection in traveling. And we had some interesting stories today of several instances of people on their way to the feast and how God must have intervened miraculously to save them from serious accidents. That was the only explanation they could see, that God intervened, because there was no way out of some of these situations people were in. We put our trust in God. And the festival lesson in this psalm is God preserves his people. It shows us that the church of God will survive, because we find that the Feast of Tabernacles shows us preparing for a future. The people of God will be part of that future, will survive in time events, and the gates of the grave will not prevail against the church. So again, it's a very positive, very encouraging psalm. In some commentaries, it's called the Keeper's Psalm. Keeper's Psalm. It meant a lot to those Old Testament pilgrims that God would keep them in safety on their way to Jerusalem. It means a lot to us as well, that we can trust God, leave our worries, our homes behind, leave those things behind, and trust God. He is our keeper. So it also, I think, Psalm 121 explains one reason we keep the Feast of Tabernacles. The major reason why we keep the Feast of Tabernacles, is that it is a reminder. You know, God says, keep the feast, and that he will preserve, protect, and look after our interests. Christ is our keeper. Psalm 122. Any comments on Psalm 121? I think we've all had experiences that can help us identify with some of those situations in Psalm 121. Psalm 122, a psalm of David, it says. Song of Ascents, a psalm of David. Some translations call it a psalm of Zion. We'll see why in just a moment. Because it brings us to an attitude of worship, to a very peaceful frame of mind. Verse 1 and 2. David said, I was glad when they said to me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. I was glad. David was happy to know that God was calling him to the feast. And it deals with our attitude toward the temple, the spiritual temple, and worship. Temple symbolizes God's church. God's church is a spiritual temple. We are the spiritual temple of God. And we know that Christ has authority in his church. He has authority in our lives. And David said, I was glad when they said to me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. Christ teaches us. Well, let's read on in verse 3. Jerusalem is built as a city that is compact together. Jerusalem is built as a city that is compact together. A couple of interesting verses. Galatians 4, verse 26 tells us that Jerusalem above is the mother of us all. Hebrews says, we are come to the heavenly Jerusalem, the church of the firstborn. The church, spiritual temple of God, is our mother, the mother of us all spiritually. What is our relationship to our mother? What is the relationship of children to a mother? Psalm 122 pictured Jerusalem to Israel as the physical place they came to for the feast, where the temple was, and where they received instruction, where they were nurtured. And for us in the New Testament church, we are nurtured by the mother of us all, God's church. We're part of a body and part of the work of God. We come together to be with the family of God. It's kind of our annual family reunion. That was David's attitude. This is what I need. This is where I want to be. The family reunion. And he expresses that very clearly. Verse 4. Where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to the testimony of Israel, give thanks to the name of the Lord. Most commentaries say that the testimony of the Lord has to do with the Ten Commandments. We stand on the Ten Commandments of God. They're a major part of our belief and worship. And expounding, we expound at the feast on God's laws. We expound on the feast of God's commandments and his statutes. Holy days are among his statutes. But it also reminds us that the testimony of God, that is the law of God, is going to be in place over all the earth during the millennium. The testimony of God will fill the earth during the millennium. The laws of God. And everybody will come to be taught the testimony of God under the authority of Jesus Christ. Verse 5, for thrones are set there for judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Again, there's some symbolism here. The throne, of course, where the king sat. The king had authority in the nation of Israel. Judgments, the king made judgments in order to preserve peace and unity in the nation of Israel. In God's church, the feast showed ancient Israel where the source of that authority and truth was, the temple of God and the throne of the king. There was certain authority there. It was where God placed his name. God places his name at his feast sites today. It's where God places his name. And in the New Testament church, there were offices of authority. And authority was given to in the New Testament church to make judgments. And those judgments were for the peace and protection and unity of the church. And someday, of course, the whole world will be under that authority through Jesus Christ. Verse 6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper who love you. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. The issue here in this matter of the throne and judgments is authority that serves and protects peace. Ministry has a hand in that. When we are spiritually fed at the feast, God's ordained elders, we pray for them, for God to inspire them. We believe that God inspires his ministry and gives us at the feast the messages, the spiritual food we need, and that we'll hear what we need to keep us strong during the coming year. So we have the judgments and authority to preserve peace. Peace be within your walls, prosperity within your palaces. Verse 7, again, it's important to pray for that. Pray and ask God to preserve peace at the feast. to preserve, to pray for those who are serving at the feast, pray for those who are speaking at the feast. Verse 8 and 9, for the sake of my brethren and companions, I will now say, peace be within you. Because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good. Two reasons given here, two more reasons why we go to the feast, to be with our brothers and sisters in an attitude of peace and unity, and to be part of the church, the mother of us all, in a unified way, the whole family together, worshiping God at the Feast of Tabernacles. So Psalm 122 gives us a picture of that attitude of preparing to enjoy the peace and the spiritual food God has prepared for us and the unity that we have through the Feast of Tabernacles. Well, let's look at the next one, Psalm 123, another song of ascent. One commentary calls it a song of lament, and it expresses a, let's read the first couple of verses, verse 1 and 2. Unto you I lift up my eyes, O you who dwell in the heavens. Behold, as the eyes of servants look to the hand of their masters, as the eyes of a maid to the hand of her mistress. That's an interesting description. The attitude of a servant towards master or mistress, like being a slave in the sense of being willing to yield to God and Christ. It was important for a servant or a slave to watch closely the master or the mistress of the house and to be attuned to their will, to every nuance of expression and instruction, to pay attention to those things. We go to the feast because God commands us to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, because we know he loves us and we love him. It's the most important reason probably why we go, because God says go to the feast. And he loves us, we love him, we respect his will. His will is that we keep the Feast of Tabernacles. We want to please him because we know he loves us and we love him. It's a frame of mind at the feast that we want to have. We're pleasing God. We're pleasing our elder brother, Jesus Christ. We lift our eyes to God for what he has for us, the same way that a servant lifts his eyes to a master or mistress to find out what his will is. We want to know what that will is, and pay attention to it. So this is the attitude we have towards God, as a slave who watches every move that his master makes to be in line and in harmony with the master. Doesn't the Bible say we are owned by God? We've been bought and paid for with a price. We're, in a sense, to be so riveted on Jesus Christ and what he wants us to do that, for example, during the feast, we don't miss a crumb. In other words, we want everything we can gather from the feast, first and foremost spiritually, in instruction, fellowship, in singing songs, praising God and worshiping God. We want to gather all we can from the feast, having our eyes and mind riveted, Jesus Christ and God the Father. We serve them, and we're there at the feast serving them as well. We want to soak up everything we can at the feast. A servant could not afford to be blasé about his master, couldn't afford to be laid back about his duties. He had to be fixed on what the master wanted him to do. We can't afford to be blasé about the feast. We want to be fixed on God and what God has for us. Verse 3 and 4, Psalm 123, verse 3, have mercy on us, O Lord, have mercy on us, for we are exceedingly filled with contempt. Our soul is exceedingly filled with the scorn of those who are at ease with the contempt of the proud. The Nelson Study Bible had an interesting comment on this these verses. It says, the people who prayed for God's mercy had to endure the contempt of their neighbors. Perhaps they were being mocked for their resolute faith in God. God's people sometimes are mocked are criticized for taking time off from work, taking time off for school, saving a tenth of their income to be able to go to the Feast of Tabernacles. But we do all those things, putting our trust in God. Sometimes God's people get mocked for that by relatives, our friends, our employers, our teachers. All of those things have happened. And we understand the meaning and the fulfillment of that verse. And yet we go to the feast, pack up, and we go. People come from all over the world. Now, Psalms 124, 125, and 126 all show different aspects of deliverance and protection. That's what these next three Psalms, and we'll finish up with these three Psalms. These three Psalms all show aspects of deliverance and protection. And the fruit of that is to be faith and thankfulness. So that's what these Psalms are illustrating, how God delivers and preserves and protects us, and how we grow in faith and in thankfulness. Psalm 124 is a psalm of declaring praise for God. Declaring praise for God. Notice the first three verses. If it had not been the Lord who was on our side, let Israel now say, if it had not been the Lord who was on our side. Now the Hebrew is even more direct. The Lord was for us is how it reads in the Hebrew. The Lord was for us. If he hadn't been for us, verse 2, when men rose up against us, then they would have swallowed us alive when their wrath was kindled against us. If the Lord wasn't for us, but God was for us, God refused to allow Israel to be destroyed in that day. He will refuse to allow Israel to be destroyed in the time of the end. During the Great Tribulation, there will be another attempt to completely destroy Israel. But we know that beyond that, in Ezekiel 40, 41, and through 48, Israel, physical Israel, is shown keeping the Feast of Tabernacles into the millennium. So Israel is going to survive. God will protect and deliver Israel. In the millennium, God will stress through the feast that he took responsibility to remember his covenant with Abraham, to preserve and protect Israel, and will bring Israel through that time of the end. The feast also is to strengthen our faith and encourage us. The fact that God's people gather year after year to keep the feast is proof that God has intervened for us through the year, has made it possible for us to once again come together, that God has shown his favor in the lives of his people who come to keep feast. So throughout the Old and in the New Testament, people kind of risk life and limb just to get to the feast, especially in the Old Testament, to come up to Jerusalem. It wasn't easy for them, nor is it easy for us at times. That's what Psalm 124 is about. Verse 4 through 8, then the waters would have overwhelmed us. The streams would have gone over our soul. Then the swollen waters would have gone over our soul. Blessed be the Lord, who has not given us as prey to their teeth. Our soul has escaped as a bird from the snare of the fowlers. The snare is broken, and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord, who made heaven and earth. Yeah, what an encouraging reminder about how God is at work in the lives of his people. Yes, we've lost some through the years. Some have died in the faith, and others have their afflictions and trials. But in all of that, we try to keep our eyes on God's kingdom and the promise of the future and God's deliverance physically and spiritually. So Psalm 24 is a declarative psalm of praise. The Lord was for us, and he is for us today as well. Psalm 125 is often called a psalm of trust. Trust. And we find that in the first words of this psalm, verse 1 and 2. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forever. Again, it illustrates that principle, our security is God. In this age, from events coming, we can't save ourselves. We are going to have to rely on God in faith. Those who are alive at the end of the age, those who have God's Spirit, his people, are going to have to rely on God and have faith to do so. God does draw a line beyond which Satan cannot go, just as he did with Job. And in the end of the age, God draws a line. Past that line, Satan can't go. But there's still a great deal of trial coming. God will stay the hand of Satan and not allow him to puncture holes in our armor if we stay close to God. Verse 3 speaks about the scepter of wickedness. What is a scepter of wickedness but a symbol? The power of evil. A scepter is a symbol of ruling. The god of this age is Satan the devil. And here is wickedness ruling. For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous, lest the righteous reach out their hands to iniquity. So again, there's a promise. And again, this reminds me of that promise that Christ made that the gates of the grave would not prevail against the church. Not prevail against his church, would never die. So a promise of God's protection, and we can trust in him. Verse 4 and 5, do good, O Lord, to those who are good. To me, that is, again, just a very encouraging message. And verse, the next part of it, and to those who are upright in their hearts. God knows our hearts. God knows those who are good. That is, those who are trying to live a godly life. Those who are trying to follow in the footsteps of Christ. God does good to those who are good. God knows who they are. And he knows those who have upright hearts. And when we yield to God's instructions, obey God's laws, come together to worship him, God sees that. And God blesses that. Verse 5, as for such as turn aside to their crooked ways, the Lord shall lead them away with the workers of iniquity. Finally, he says, peace upon Israel. A prayer for peace. The peace that is going to end all tyranny, all division, all hostility. Again, it's a scripture not only about the peace that we find there at the feast, but it's a scripture about the future peace that is coming and that we look forward to that the Feast of Tabernacles pictures. Finally, and we'll conclude with Psalm 126 and pick it up in Psalm 127 in the next Bible study in September. Psalm 126, the Nelson Study Bible labels it a Song of Zion. And again, we'll see why as we read on. But let's read verse 1, 2, and 3. When the Lord brought back the captivity of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with singing. Then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us, and we are glad. An attitude of joy and thankfulness at the feast when the children of Israel would arrive in Jerusalem, you really get into the spirit of the feast. There's something just very important about attitude as it relates to worshiping God and the Feast of Tabernacles, especially this attitude of thankfulness at the feast. We have a chance to build faith through the year. We go to the feast in faith. Our faith is strengthened by the messages we hear at the feast. And also, thankfulness is emphasized. We become more and more thankful to God that he has brought us there. We're glad. We're happy. We rejoice. We enjoy fellowshipping. We enjoy instruction every day. We enjoy the music. We enjoy going out together with friends and brethren over a nice meal. We enjoy meeting new people. All of these brings a certain amount of laughter, gladness, joy, and makes us very thankful. We recognize God's hand at work. We see what a wonderful thing God has given us to instruct us to come to His great Feast of Tabernacles and to be fed spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and physically in every way possible with the best that God has to give us in this age, and to recall and to look forward to what He's going to give us in the world tomorrow. Verse 4 and 5, why is this injected here? Bring back our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. Why is that injected here? He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. Now, certainly it had an application to ancient Israel. They went through their trials of fading nations and persecution and punishment for straying, disobeying God, then coming back together and remembering those sad times and coming to Jerusalem for the feast. But what about us today, the faithful, God's people? Do we sow in tears sometimes as we just see a world around us collapsing, becoming more and more evil in so many ways, seeing people suffer from disasters, from tragedies, seeing people suffer from crime and war, seeing people suffer from ignorance, lack of knowledge. Here we are, you know, it's hard to do the work, I find, do the work to preach the gospel of God and to stay focused on God's kingdom in a world that is full of so many distractions and human suffering. You know, we are to stay focused on God's kingdom, doing the work, but there's an awful lot of misery and suffering all around us, sometimes very close to us, family, close friends. And, you know, during the course of a year, there are a lot of tears that we do sow. But we know there's a time coming when God is going to wipe away all tears. We go to the Feast of Tabernacles and we leave behind that distress. As it says here, those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. We go to the feast and we reap in joy. He who continually goes forth weeping, and through the course of a year, we may have many occasions to weep, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. Anciently, their produce they brought with them. We bring things to celebrate with, you know, our finances that we've saved to celebrate the feast, and we come again and again and next year and year after year. We come to the feast and rejoice at the feast. So these verses remind us that no matter what level of trials we may go through, what level of price sometimes we pay for honoring God, putting God feet first, God promises that we ultimately, his people, will receive back from him compounded interest, so to speak. And it reminds me of a psalm which I remember this morning back in Psalm 16, which is, again, one of the most encouraging psalms in the Bible. I mentioned this a few weeks back in the context of thinking about reflecting on eternity. But here's what God has in mind for his family, ultimately. Psalm 16, verse 11, you will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Now we go to the Feast of Tabernacles. In God's presence, we find fullness of joy, more so than at any other time of the year physically. And at God's right hand are pleasures forevermore in God's kingdom. Those are going to be given to us. So a summary of Psalm 124, 125, and 126, summary would simply be, God's protection is a hallmark of the feast that should lead us to greater faith and thankfulness. God's protection is a hallmark. Feast, from that we grow in faith, thankfulness to God. So these are, again, an introduction, so to speak, to the Psalms, the first half, I guess, or so, of the Psalms of Ascents, that really do capture a great deal of the spirit of the feast. And it's kind of hard, I know, for those who take notes, try to take notes on Bible study like this, but I hope what it will do is will kindle a desire to look into the Psalms even more on your own, the Psalms of Ascents, to take some time and read through, you know, Psalms 120 to Psalm 134 between now and the Feast of Tabernacles, and really reflect on what's there for us to help us prepare for the feast. And in the next Bible study, we'll do the remaining Psalms of Ascents. So thank you. Enjoy the rest of the Sabbath and the beautiful day that it is.